Hi, podcast listeners. Ira here. Here's the deal. We need your help. Each week, my staff and I seek out the most interesting scientists in the world, and we bring them to you over the airwaves, on our website, through these podcasts. And you know, we're happy to do it, and we're especially happy that you enjoy it. But putting all of this together is not cheap. So we're hoping that you can pitch in. Point your smartphones or computers to sciencefriday.com/donate to make a gift today. $5, $10, even a buck. Whatever you can give. And if you give 50 bucks or more, we'll send you a Science Friday tote bag. Yeah, so that you can show off your support. Now on to the show. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. What's your earliest memory? Really, really, dig back far. How far back can you go? Mine is probably my grandfather's striped pants because I can only see up to his knees at that age. But it turns out there may be a lot more lurking in your unconscious mind that you simply don't recall. Language, for example. The words you hear as an infant, maybe even in the womb, can stick with us until we're adults, even if we can't recall them. Take, for example, children adopted from abroad. They hear one language for their first few years of life, and then they leave, never learning to speak it. But a new study suggests that when, as adults, they hear that first language spoken, their brains still process the sounds as a native speaker would, even if they can't understand a word. My next guest was an author on that study out this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Fred Genesee is a professor emeritus in the Department of Psychology at McGill University in Montreal. Welcome to Science Friday.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Tell us what you did here. You were looking at how Chinese adoptees who don't speak Chinese react to the sound of a Chinese language.
Yes, that's right. We were interested in seeing whether these children retain any traces, neurocognitive traces of Chinese, even though they had stopped learning Chinese anywhere between 6 months and 12, 24 months of age. So when they moved to Montreal or Quebec, they started learning French, and that's the only language they've heard or used for 10 or 12 years. And people who work with these children, as well as other researchers, have argued that they are such good second language learners because they actually lose the first language, so there's no interference from the first language. But that was never really substantiated very well. So we just completed a study where we looked at children who were between about 9 and 15 years of age. Some of these children had been born in China and initially started learning Chinese, but then switched to French when they moved to Canada. And we compared their processing of Chinese to two other groups of children. One group of children were French speakers who had never heard Chinese, only heard Chinese, French, and used French. And a third group, which is very important in the study, and these were children who were born in Montreal, but they grew up speaking Chinese initially, and then they began to acquire French as a second language around the same age as the Chinese adoptees. And they were in a scanner, an fMRI scanner, and they simply had to listen to pseudo-words, words that sounded like Chinese, but they were not real Chinese words, and they were presented in pairs. Some of the pairs were identical, but some of the pairs differed from one another, and they differed in tone. And unlike English and French, tone is important in Chinese, because if you change the tone of a word, you change the meaning of a word.
Can you give me an example of the tonal change? What kind of
sound? Well, for example, the word ma can have a rising or a falling intonation. Ma or ma, and it's the difference between the meaning of a word of mother or horse, mother-in-law or horse.
You don't want to screw that up.
No, you don't. That's right. So we change the tone of English words a lot, but it doesn't change the meaning. But in Chinese, if you change the tone, there's 6 tones, then you actually change the meaning of the word. So what we found was that, actually, interestingly, all 3 of these groups were able to distinguish the sounds that were different as accurately as one another and as quickly as one another. The difference was that the 2 groups who had heard Chinese during the first year of life, they engaged the areas of the brain that were in the left hemisphere, indicating that they were hearing these tones as linguistic units, And this was particularly surprising in case of the adoptees because they had, as I said, and as you pointed out, they hadn't heard Chinese for 10 or 12 years. The children who had learned only French, they engaged areas of the brain that were in the right hemisphere. And generally speaking, the right hemisphere is involved in processing sounds, but in a non-linguistic way. Mm-hmm. So what we saw was that the children who had prior exposure to Chinese were making this distinction on the basis of language processes in the brain.
So would it be easy for them to take up Chinese now, since they learned or they could recognize the tonal changes?
Well, that's a good question. We don't know. There is one study that has looked at this. It was a study that was done in Sweden. It was a case study, so the results were a little bit messy. The author of that study, Kenneth Hildenstam, he argues that they acquired, it was Korean in that case, Korean more quickly than Swedish speakers who had never heard Korean. But you would expect that it might be easier for them because they have these neural pathways that are fine-tuned to Chinese in our case.
What about other senses? Were they exposed to smells or other kinds of things when they were very little and, you know, now recognize them better?
Well, we haven't tested that, but that would be a really interesting thing to do. It might even be true that they would be sensitive to certain kinds of visual information. Because interestingly, we know from research in Canada that when children acquire language, they also acquire a lot of visual information, the shape of the lips, the facial expressions, and so on, that are associated with specific languages. So it would be interesting in the future to see whether children like this, the adopted children, are also sensitive to visual information or other sounds that they haven't heard, but heard in the first years of life.
Or perhaps early emotional experiences.
Yes, well, Freud would certainly argue that we retain a lot of emotional baggage even long after it's useful to us.
Yeah. Do these kids at all, I mean, you haven't studied them since they've been adults, but is it possible that when they get to be adults, this Chinese will sort of click in their minds and say, I understand some words that I didn't think I would understand? Does it come back to them is I guess what I'm asking.
No, that's unlikely. As I mentioned, there was a study done in France that looked at Korean adoptees, and the task that they were presented with is that they heard a variety of words from different languages, and they were asked to identify the words that they thought were Korean. And the assumption of that study was that if there were traces of Korean left in the brain, they might be able to distinguish Korean words from other Korean words. But the Korean adoptees in France, they weren't able to identify the Korean words any better than people who had heard only French. The reason for that is that during the first few months of life, children are able to distinguish all sorts of sounds from all sorts of different languages, whether those are sounds that are important in their language or not. But around 7 months of age, their brain starts to fine-tune to the languages, the sounds that are important in their language.
So this leaves a permanent mark then?
It
leaves a permanent mark in their brain. What about with music? If they were exposed to Mozart, let's say, in the womb or at an early age, would they keep that memory alive also?
Well, there's evidence that children are sensitive to the kinds of music they've heard in the womb if you test them shortly after they're born. So children who have heard classical music prefer classical music. Children who have heard metal rock prefer that. Mm-hmm. What we don't know from that research is how long they retain those memories into adulthood. It's hard to do that kind of research because it's hard to find people who would not have heard classical music or heavy metal rock as adolescents or adults. The interesting thing about these adoptees is we know they've never heard Chinese in 10 or 12 years.
Is there any gender difference in these kids?
Well, good question. We included only girls primarily because 99% of the children who are given up for adoption in China are girls because of their language policies. But that's an empirical question. We don't know. There's some evidence that girls are verbally precocious in comparison to boys. So it might mean that girls' memories are even more, the maternal language is even more vivid than boys. But we don't know at this point. Hmm. I'm not aware of any research that's actually looked at gender differences using neuroimaging methods at that age.
Any way to test for mathematical sensitivity? You know, being around people who are doing math. I'm just thinking out loud here, you know.
Right.
The kinds of things that are associated with music and maybe later on that it's easier. I remember hearing about that.
Well, you know, what children are very sensitive to early on in development is rhythm. And different languages have different rhythm, and different natural sounds in the real world have different rhythms. And there's a sense in which sensitivity to rhythm is kind of a mathematical thing. It would be interesting to think about how you would actually look at that in a more simple mathematical way.
Do we actually know what is happening in the brain, either chemically or otherwise, connections, pathways at this early age that allows such, you know, easy learning of a language?
Well, there are certainly neurochemical connections. So as children's brains, really, and infants' brains are really pattern recognizers. And as I mentioned, even before they're born, they're starting to recognize patterns in the input. And probably what's happening is that there are neurochemical connections being made in the neurons in their brain that correspond to the sounds that they're hearing. And when they hear sounds that have the same rhythm, for example, then those networks in the brain fire at a very low threshold so that they get activated very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Do you think other people will be testing kids for other things besides the language recognition?
I suspect that that'll start to happen. People will start to look at how early and how permanent these kinds of experiences show up and how long-lasting they are. As I said, one of the challenges is, you know, our experiences are so varied as children and as adults. Finding experiences that we have as children that we then don't have later on is not so easy, in fact.
Mm. Well, you know, you could take a ride on one of these, you know, go to Disney World or something and figure out whether you remember it later on.
Well, that's right.
That's an emotional experience, right?
Right. Or certain kinds of food.
Right.
Feed children spinach when they're very young and see if they remember the taste of spinach later on, because most children won't eat spinach before they're adults.
All right, Dr. Genesee, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Good luck to your work.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Fred Genesee is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Psychology, McGill University in Montreal.